So, Mr. Wells.
Yes.
Before we begin with our food related adjacent something, let's talk about our brackets this week.
Yes. We talked in a previous episode, I think it was just last time, about our brackets that we're doing.
Yes.
Because we want to find out what your fan favorite food heist and bad story idea
are. With eyes toward making a t-shirt.
Yes.
Or maybe two.
One or two t-shirts. Yes.
And so we're going to give you a brief reminder about what you can vote on this week, because we have we have our first live brackets. There should be in the description, there should be a link to vote, and there should be links to each of these episodes timestamped at where we start talking about the item.
So if you're listening to this more than a week from now, we apologize. You'll be voting on something else.
Yes.
But if you're listening to this on time, this week you get to vote. The food heist competition is Feeding Arizona, which is the baby formula heist, and the Gator Gourmands, which is the alligator eggs stolen in the middle of a hurricane.
Judging by these timestamps that Scar helpfully provided in these handy sheets, we talk about one for 9 minutes and 30 seconds and another one for about 3 minutes. So, yeah, perhaps that's why one is seated number one and one is seated number 16.
Perhaps. But what we think is going to win is not necessarily what will win, because this is your vote, not
ours. We're kind of hoping for upsets. Those are interesting. So you vote on what you want, a t-shirt, or you get to pick your own criteria for what you vote on. We're not going to even tell you why you would vote for one or the other. You can vote however you want. Four bad story ideas. You get to either talk about, from episode 96, Jack the carjacking car. Cold open, food is fuel, is what Scar wrote down here. Or you can talk about Suddenly No One Can Read or Write from episode 72, which the timestamps on this one are a little deceptive, because it looks like Suddenly No One Can Read or Write actually has more time talked about it. But I think a lot of that is dead silence of us just trying to figure out.
How could we make this interesting?
How could we make this interesting?
You know, so he's got the episodes on here. We didn't read the episode numbers for the food heists. Gator Gourmands is also episode 96.
Oh.
Which means your favorite and my favorite are both from the same episode.
Man,
that must have been a killer episode.
That's a golden episode. Maybe we should put that up as start listening here at the end.
Listen to this. Right before it got terrible.
Right before, you know, jumping the shark. But yeah, honestly, if we jumped over sharks, that would be really great for this podcast. Yeah, that's the sort of thing.
It also would for sure be the last episode, because we would both die.
Maybe, maybe. Yes. Maybe the shark would die.
Possibly.
Hitting the shark. Now, everyone jumps the shark, but what about the failed attempts to jump
the
shark?
Failed attempts where you just jump at a shark.
Jump at the shark.
While screaming.
We keep trying to jump at the shark on this program, and we do not succeed very often. In fact, I don't know that we've succeeded yet.
This is the part on Mythbusters where they would build a robot that just throws people over sharks so they can do it like 100 times and see what happens.
See what happens to you. Yeah. If you're being thrown over, you're not jumping. But I guess was the Fonz really? I guess he was. He was on water skis.
He was being pulled.
Pulled over the shark.
Which is a jump of sorts.
Yeah.
It is an assisted jump.
Assisted jump. He had help jumping the shark. The Fonz probably didn't need it.
No.
But he did need.
For all we know, he was propelling that motorboat.
That's true. That is very true. Oh, this podcast. So we're going to talk about a food heist. But
yeah. It's not a heist. Obviously, my doctoral work was in food heists.
That's right. It was.
But there are many interesting conversations to be had in the much wider discipline of just food-related
things.
Crime and disaster.
We need a term for that. We really do. Like,
okay.
Like the food.
Food scholarship.
Food scholarship. Oh, yes. Yes. A new entry in food scholarship. Or food.
I don't know. What we have today is, and I hope you're excited, the most disappointing food related story that anyone has ever sent to me.
Wow.
Yeah.
I actually am.
You excited for this?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
It starts off awesome. You ready for this?
Okay.
Remember when trains kept crashing and like horrible environmental disasters were happening all over the place? So a train, this was actually a couple months ago, a train in Arizona derailed, carrying 8 tanker cars full of corn syrup.
Okay. Promising start.
Promising start. No one was injured. Nothing was damaged. There were no spills and no leaks of any kind. No one was stealing it.
Sad that no one was injured.
And obviously, that's a good thing.
That's a good thing. Food heists are more fun and more engaging.
This was not a heist. Yep. This didn't turn into an opportunistic theft. It didn't turn into a spill. It was just the train cars went off the rail, and then they got them back on the rail, and everything was fine.
Super boring.
It's super boring.
I bet this happens all the time. Yeah. And there's, I mean, really anytime a train derails, there's food on that train somewhere. Right?
Presumably. So I don't know if 8 tanker cars full of corn syrup.
I mean, yes, a matter of scale, but in matter of quality, there might be, you know.
Now, see, the reason that I was so disappointed in this is, have you heard of, and I'm pretty sure this was in Boston, the molasses flood?
I have heard of that. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was a legitimately amazing flood of a city.
Yeah.
Several blocks of like hip deep molasses.
Food related natural disaster.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. And here we didn't really get anything. So,
listeners, please send to us your favorite food related natural disaster. And maybe we can find one that is a little more engaging.
We're presenting this as like an educational example of how boring this can be.
Yes. I mean,
please don't do this to us anymore.
Your doctoral work
was
full of finding really boring things like this. And you had to write all kinds of essays about it. And that's why you bring to us only the finest in food-related crimes.
Lovingly curated food-related crimes.
Yes.
Yeah. When the filter comes off, you get corn syrup that didn't even spill. It's like this train guy wasn't even trying.
Better luck next time. Yeah. Better luck next time. Make a bigger mess.
Now, we could assume this does actually feel like it might be a distraction that the groundskeeper used in order to steal something else.
That's true.
Right?
Yes, yes. We got to find out what was going on
wishful thinking.
In Arizona at this time.
Yeah.
When was this?
This was March 16th, 2023. So 2 months ago, Mojave County, Arizona, near the California border.
All right. There's going to be some food smuggling going on somewhere in there. Maybe.
And only this podcast has the journalistic vim and vigor to shine a spotlight on this and say, let's look a little deeper.
That's right. Let's find out what that groundskeeper is up to. Out of food heist prison again. He's like the Joker. You put him in and
you just
like...
can't. There's no cage can hold him.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, there you go. There's your daily dose of food scholarship.
This conversation went off the rails.
Yeah.
But not as far as we would want it to, and not as interesting as we wanted it to.
This conversation is such a wonderful example of how I am astonished anyone listens to this show.
Well, I think they
No one in the world thinks you and I are as funny as you and I think we are.
Well, they're right.
Whatever.
That's the story of our lives, Dan.
Yes. Granted.
I mean, going all the way back to when we were editors at the magazine, nobody thought we were as funny as we thought
we were. Nobody does.
Yes.
Okay. Now, like, now that we have thoroughly demonstrated our own lack of talent, what are we going to talk about today?
We're going to talk about Glass Onion.
Oh, very good.
Yes. Glass Onion, which I finally watched.
Finally watched. Are we also going to talk about Knives Out?
We will spoil both Knives Out and Glass Onion. So, spoilers on the table for both of those films. You know, it's not that we are bad at being timely with our pop culture discussions.
No.
We just want to make sure our fans have a chance to have an extended period of time in which to engage with said media before we come in.
We provide a buffer zone.
Yes.
In which to see these movies before we come in and spoil them.
Yes. Sometimes a buffer zone of many years. But now that I have finally seen it, when did you see it? Did you see it right when it came out?
I saw Glass Onion pretty close to when it came out. Because I love Knives Out immensely, and I think it's brilliant and wonderful. Mm-hmm. And I was very excited to watch the follow-up.
And
I enjoyed it. I didn't love it. I have a lot of friends who deeply, deeply love it. I thought it was okay.
I kind of had the same reaction. I maybe liked it a little more than you. What I said to you is it's almost a good movie.
Yeah.
But it's a big almost because it's actually, that's maybe the wrong way to put it. It is a great movie to talk about because mm-hmm. there's a whole bunch to talk about with this style of movie and this level of my engagement with it. Because number one, the opening was just fantastic. This is where they're opening the puzzle boxes yeah. and we mm-hmm. get the quick introductions of the characters. Really enjoyed that. I thought I was just in for a wonderful time. And then I was in for a good time.
Yeah. And that opening is a really brilliant way of introducing them because mm-hmm. we got to know very little about their relationships to each other.
Yes.
But a ton about their personalities and who they are and how they go about solving problems.
And that they call each other.
Mm-hmm.
Which a lot of my disappointment with the film has to do with it doesn't seem to live up to a lot of what's going on at the beginning. But I do want to say I liked this movie.
Yes.
This is not a bad movie. And we are going to talk about things we didn't like about it, but because movies that for me almost hit are way more interesting to talk about than movies that just barely hit or movies that are far off from hitting.
Yeah.
And this has got really great performances, some really interesting use of cinematic tropes. Yeah. Rian Johnson is very talented as a director and has a vision, and I like that he's making these movies. And, you know, I love just watching most of the characters on the screen. I love Benoit Blanc. He just he cracks me up.
He's a great character. And I agree with you. Mm-hmm. I don't hate this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I know that I have the reputation as the guy who hates good things.
Yes.
I did enjoy this movie,
mm-hmm.
but there's a reason that we're talking about Glass Onion instead of Knives Out.
Yes.
Because Knives Out was incredibly good and incredibly brilliant and innovative and everything, which kind of makes it not super interesting to dissect. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of flawless, whereas Glass Onion is riddled with flaws that make mm-hmm. it very interesting to examine.
Yeah, and I would say that there are some interesting things. Knives Out is a fantastic movie. It leans on contrivances mm-hmm. in a way that doesn't make a problem for it, that in Glass Onion are just a huge problem. And so they both exhibit a lot of the same traits, but for some reason, Knives Out, I just bought hook, line, and sinker, and Glass Onion, I didn't. And I actually kind of came up with something I wanted to talk about is like a philosophy okay. of film viewing, right?
Interesting.
I think there is a difference between the experience of watching the film and the after effects of that film on you. And I think discussing those two things, separate emotions mm-hmm. is relevant. For instance, Knives Out does not hold together as a murder mystery.
No.
Not Knives Out. Glass Onion.
Glass Onion.
Glass Onion does not hold together as a murder mystery. Knives Out doesn't either, but it's not supposed to be.
Yeah.
Right? But Knives Out is kind of a cat and mouse with a murder mystery kind of bracketing it.
Mm-hmm.
Glass Onion does not hold together at all as a murder mystery for reasons we'll talk about.
Yeah.
But it does kind of make for a fun viewing experience in the same way that kind of a Fast and the Furious movie does, where it's just like you go, you enjoy the cinematic presentation,
mm-hmm.
and then you're done with it.
Yeah.
The difference between the two movies is Knives Out, I'm thinking about, I want to watch again. I want to pick apart in the good ways, be like, how did he manage to pull this off?
Mm-hmm.
I want to learn to do that.
Yeah.
Where Glass Onion, afterward, I'm like, oh man, that whole thing falls apart so hard. The moment I just poke at it, that's interesting to talk about, but
yeah, this is kind of the refrigerator logic.
Yes.
Issue where, you know, it seems like it makes sense. And then later while you're getting a snack.
Yeah.
And you're puzzling it over. And you think, huh. But let's talk about some of the good things first.
Yes.
Because like you said, the performances in it are wonderful.
They are.
I especially really loved Dave Bautista and Kate Hudson.
Both were great.
I both thought they yeah. did a phenomenal job.
Yeah.
And this is also one of the only movies I've ever watched where I thought, this is going to win a Best Costume Oscar. Like, I don't know if it did, because I don't watch the Oscars, but the way that everyone was dressed, the way that the group scenes were shot.
Yep.
Rian Johnson has this really cool video for like Wired or something where he goes through the scene on the dock where they're all arriving one mm-hmm. by one and how it was framed and how it was staged and how people enter and leave the frame in the dock. It's a gorgeous movie
mm-hmm.
and just beautiful to look at.
Great cameos. Mm-hmm. Seeing Angela Lansbury one last time.
Mm-hmm.
Sondheim showing up. Having the tennis player, Williams.
Vanessa, Serena, one of the two. Venus Williams?
Yes. Just in the background. Just
oh, yeah, on the little on the fitness workout
fitness thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it's those cameos that are like, oh, it's a video, so you don't pay attention to it. And then she says the thing, you're like, wait, you were real the whole time? That sort of thing. The moment that I love the most, the opening's the best part, but the moment I love the most is that moment where Benoit Blanc is like, wait, you are an idiot. I'm not facing down some genius. And it's this whole refutation of the idea that people at the top deserve to be there, mm-hmm. which as someone who is at the top of the field, I accept as a refutation, right? Like,
yeah.
I can't say which things I did led to my success and which things were pure luck and being in the right place. So I like that idea, that whole concept of, well, obviously he's too smart to have gone and done this murder, so it can't be him. Oh, wait, no, he's not. With the malapropisms that you're cutting to show that he doesn't understand even the English language, but he's so confident that he does. That moment almost made the ending, which I think is terrible, come together for me.
Really? Mm-hmm. That moment didn't work for me okay. as well. Mm-hmm. But I know that that is a beloved and favorite moment by a lot of people.
And it does match the theme, the glass onion. You think it's really complicated, but it's not. And so I guess this is the first thing I'd like to talk about with this is the whole movie supposed to be a joke? Is the whole movie that you're watching this movie, the murder mystery is dumb, everything about it is dumb. Like, did the director write this and not able to figure out how to make it really work cleverly, and so just made the theme that it's dumb? Does hanging a lantern
purpose,
on that, like,
maybe.
The only thing that made me say he's got to be doing that is when he burns the Mona Lisa.
Yeah.
As, like, a great moment of triumph that we're supposed to love, which I was completely, by then, just like, what? Why am I cheering for, like, it's a dramatic scene where she, mm-hmm. like, no, that's our cultural heritage. And
yeah.
that's the moment where I'm like, wait a minute, maybe this is a joke on all of us. Maybe he didn't even want to make this movie or something, and he just decided to make it a giant prank.
I don't know. Like, even the title, Glass Onion, comes mm-hmm. from a Beatles song.
Okay.
Which was a Beatles song which they wrote specifically about how their songs don't mean anything and everyone thinks that they do.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. Like, that was a very overt reference to
okay.
the meaninglessness.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. that song actually plays over the end credits for a little bit. And so it's possible that it is a big joke being presented on the audience. But at the same time, I don't know. Everything is in it is very intricate. Not all of it holds together.
Right.
But I don't know. I don't know. I'm glad to hear that you didn't like the Mona Lisa burning thing.
Yeah.
That's always, for me, like when especially disaster movies,
mm-hmm.
will blow up cool, important things.
Yeah.
And that always bothers me.
Well, and in this, it's not even the evil aliens. It's our protagonist getting
yeah.
revenge on a selfish jerk by burning the Mona Lisa.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do you write that into your film and
not have it be a joke?
Not have it
I don't
be
know.
A joke.
Because for me, like, that guy wasn't worth
yeah.
the Mona Lisa.
He definitely wasn't. Revenge
like,
on him wasn't.
If you're going to burn the Mona Lisa, it needs to be worth it.
Yes.
And that did not feel worth
well,
it to me.
And
the plot was constructed in such a way that that was like the only way that we can make sure that everybody hates this guy as much as we do is we're going to make him the guy who burned the Mona Lisa.
But he doesn't. She does.
Yes.
Which,
yes.
Right? And then it uses like two of the contrivances that are just enormously stupid. Very energetically, right?
Mm-hmm.
By the way, our protagonist had a twin sister all along and you didn't know it and she's been the one here all along. Like, that is so dumb that it's like... It's got to be intentional. Like, you don't sit down after spending all of your time, like, learning storytelling and how to use tropes and things like that and be like, you know what would be really great is if...
A secret
twin sister,
yeah.
right? And then the bullet didn't actually hit her. She had something in her pocket. Is so dumb, right? That I can't, like, I'm like Benoit Blanc. This perplexes me.
It doesn't make a ton of sense. It is so strange that we think that she died.
Yes.
But then it turns out that she didn't die. Mm-hmm. But then it turns out that the one we thought she was did die, and she's a different one.
Yeah.
And it's just layer after layer of kind of very unnecessary obfuscation.
Yeah.
I don't know. I did enjoy the kind of very intricate storytelling in the process of recontextualizing the movie. We watch it, and then we kind of Rashomon style watch the whole thing again from a different point of view, and nothing is actually what we thought it was.
Yep.
That was fun.
And that's a good carryover from Knives Out.
Yeah.
It's actually why I accept the twin thing. It didn't ruin the movie for me because I'm like, oh, this is our recontextualization. This is what he does. And I was okay with it because by then I had realized it's not a murder mystery. It's not a whodunit.
Mm-hmm.
Because in a whodunit, the whole point of the show is to have you be able to guess and get the clues and pick out who did it. And Rian Johnson in this does something I've never seen a filmmaker do in this genre, which is so deliberately hold back information to the point that he's cheating very blatantly. Like, mm-hmm. and he's showing us that he's cheating. Like, he's cutting out middles of conversations that he's showing on screen. He's having things where, like, there's the scene where Benoit Blanc leans out from behind a tree watching Dave Bautista. Mm-hmm. And I swear, I'd have to go back and look. Like, later on, we see that, and she leans out. And I swear, in the first shot, he lingers. And in the second one, she comes out immediately. And so we are seeing the scenes not just presented differently from different viewpoints. The camera is showing us different things at different
genuinely
times.
Genuinely different things.
In order to mislead us so that we cannot physically make any educated guesses. Because we just don't have the pieces that we would need.
Yeah. It's so weird.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's kind of the two main styles of mystery are the whodunit.
Yep.
We don't know who did this and we're going to figure it out.
Yep.
And then there's the how catch 'em.
Yes, the cat
and mouse. Which is we know who did it and what we're going to watch is the process of how is our protagonist, how is the detective going to figure out what's going on.
Right. And Knives Out is brilliant because it's both.
Yeah.
Right? It switches to the other one in the middle and then switches back.
Yeah. And this one is neither.
Yep.
And really is trying to be style over substance, and I think overtly so.
Yes.
I think that they knew that that's what they were doing and just leaned all the way into it.
It's why I can't really fault the movie for these things.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you that I felt bait and switched. And my dissatisfaction in the movie comes from two main things. It's not the twin thing. Oh, fine. You know, this is what the movie is. I will accept you for what you want to be. It is that I did not connect at all with the ending. I did like that reveal moment, but I don't get why, like, it's any sort of victory at the end to blow up the building. None of them are hurt by that. Why the characters suddenly turn against him, the cast? Why?
Turn against Ed Norton?
Ed Norton, yeah. And the biggest question is, why does Ed Norton not act like a human being? Like, he can be dumb, but he doesn't act like a human being, right? You know where I'm going with this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am a very woke person in general.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of the complaints about this movie is that it was so woke and, you know, a lot of very far right complaints about this is just a movie that's attacking Elon Musk and people like him. Billionaires are evil. Ha ha ha. This is one of the only movies where I've listened to those complaints and thought they kind of have a point. Ed Norton did not seem like a character. He felt like a caricature.
Yep.
And a lot of the people in the movie are kind of caricatures. But again, like Kate Hudson, Dave Bautista, those are real people who exist in the real world. Mm-hmm. They behave in a very broad way. But
yeah.
Ed Norton didn't feel like a person. He felt like a symbol.
Yeah. Like, what person with any sort of means at all, not even billionaire, any sort of means, watches the person you murdered and a detective, the most famous detective in the world, show up unexpectedly on your beach and doesn't call a helicopter to take him to a place where you can't be extradited? Like, I can think of no rationale that would make him not bolt immediately? And the greatest detective in the world, how would he think that he could just show up with her and the guy won't immediately bolt or have assassins there? Or like when you find out who did it, the only person that it didn't make sense to be was him, which in sort of whodunit logic is why you make it him and then justify it. But there's no justification. Nothing. You can't. You rewatch this movie. You're like, at this point, he would have done this. At this point, he would have done this. At this point, he would have done this. None of this makes any sense.
Yeah. And I think the movie's justification is, well, he assumes because of his success that he is as smart as everyone thinks he is and that he is going to outwit this guy. I don't necessarily buy that. But yeah. I think that's what they were going
for. The way you outwit that guy is you call your helicopter and you say, take me to a place where I can't be extradited. The most famous police detective in the world, you know. Or bring all of my people here and we'll just search everyone because I bet they brought that piece of evidence that I need.
Yeah. Well, and that is the thing is he didn't seem to be doing anything behind the scenes.
Yes.
In order to figure out, how can I get out of this?
Like when Dave Bautista sees the thing, like it's supposed to be a big reveal. He saw and he went to him and said, this changes everything, right? Which is a, again, style over substance. It's a really cool film scene. And I like coming back to it and things like that. But Edward Norton knew that he'd seen Dave Bautista. He knew the information of the woman being dead was going to come out. So this moment means nothing. This moment is something that he's been able to anticipate. What did he think was going to happen?
Yeah, the fact that he reacted the way he did in that moment doesn't make sense because he's not reacting to new information.
Yes, he's not reacting to new information. He's known all along. So
and was his plan to just kill everyone?
See,
but he wasn't trying to kill everyone.
That's how you make the movie work, is that these people all have something on him. And he has something on them and he is tired of this. And so he's brought them there and he's going to blow them all up at the end of his big reveal. Yeah. So he
changed, like it starts as, hey, let's get all my friends together for this cool murder mystery. And then Benoit Blanc and a woman I murdered show up, at which point instantly I thought, oh, well, his mind should have switched to, I'm going to kill all these people one by one, which is not what he was doing.
Yeah. So the other thing that made me dislike the movie, other than this ending we just talked about, we didn't even go into the energy that blows.
Yeah, the energy just, stuff.
Like Benoit Blanc says, remember this. I'm like, what does that even have to do with her character arc? What does blowing up the place have to do with her character arc in any way? And I guess it comes down to, it's me, right? It's character arcs. The opening 10 minutes or whatever introduced to me these characters, and I thought I was being promised, look at this diverse group who shouldn't be friends, but they are friends. Each of them seems to have something a little bit reprehensible about them. Like the scientist is willing to compromise his ethics, maybe. He's on the fence.
Yeah.
You know, the social media influencer is vapid. The right-wing guy is obviously exploiting his girlfriend and seems like he doesn't even believe the things he's saying. He's just doing it for views, right? He doesn't have integrity. And then, you know, you have the politician who you keep getting these glances from where she's like uncertain and things. And then she sees her friends and she's happy. And that opening 10 minutes shows me these people are legitimate friends. They're calling each other for help. They all are still friends despite their very different walks of life. And this felt like it was promising to me the opposite of Knives Out.
Where they all work together.
Yes, exactly. Knives Out is all these people are individually miserable human beings who are all working against each other. And I thought, oh, he's going to turn his own formula on his head. We're going to get a group of people that we think are kind of reprehensible, but they all are really nuanced and they're all friends. And it's kind of a story about how people who are friends can actually overcome things and, you know, their differences and whatnot. And I thought this was a story about taking down Edward Norton by the people that he's trying to blackmail.
Yeah.
And things like that. And I'm like, that's going to be really cool. It's going to be so different. Now, this is the movie I wanted instead of the one I got, which is totally unfair. We all do this, and it's not a flaw of the movie that it didn't make the movie I wanted to make. But the promise of nuanced characters is what I got from that. When Dave Bautista walks off screen and then his mom is yelling at him and stuff like this, I'm like, oh, there's way more to this human being, right? And when you've got this vapid social media influencer, but she knows the scientist really well, like, there's more to her. She's, you know, and then they just became more and more caricatures through the course of the film rather than being more and more nuanced and interesting.
Yeah.
The most interesting they ever were is at the beginning.
Is at the very beginning. And it was the characters that were not main characters in the beginning that yes. did eventually deepen, right? Like the girlfriend turned out to be
yep.
super intelligent mm-hmm. and interesting in one scene. Like
yes.
that was hardly a redemption for her. But to be fair to that beginning, mm-hmm. one promise that it did make is it showed us right from the beginning how Janelle Monáe solves problems.
Yes.
Everyone else is yep. trying to figure out the puzzle box.
Yep.
She looks at it for a couple seconds and then beats the hell out of it with a hammer.
Yep.
And that is how she solves the problem at the end, is through destruction.
But it doesn't solve any problems.
It doesn't, but it. She thought it did.
The movie pretends
it's
it did.
It's not a character arc because it's mm-hmm. the same at the end as it is at the beginning, but it is a promise kept, I think.
Okay.
To the movie's credit.
To the movie's credit. I didn't like how the characters were still willing to back him up after he burns the evidence. They only change their mind after he can do nothing more to hurt them. None mm-hmm. of them have arcs either. None of them learn anything.
Yeah, they didn't learn anything. They don't stand up for themselves or for anything else.
Which is, again, the same as Knives Out, but it works in Knives Out because it's about bringing all these people down. And I don't know.
Well, and also Knives Out had Ana de Armas,
yeah.
who does go through an arc mm-hmm. and who does prove herself to be a very good person
yes.
that we can root for.
It's true, it does.
And, you know, has the very symbolic character arc of My House, My Rules written on the little mug
yep.
that goes from the old man to her by the end of the movie. Like, we do see that change and it is satisfying in that way.
Yeah.
And we didn't get that this time. We got some very similar tropes, right? He's clearly like, you can see
mm-hmm.
which pieces of Knives Out he pulled out and said, these are the pieces I'm going to use. There's going to be the scene where we recontextualize everything. You didn't have all the information. Everything actually means something else. There is the kind of idea of the underprivileged woman of color is mm-hmm. going to bring down all of these jerks, right? There's a lot of these pieces that are the same, but just it wasn't satisfying in mm-hmm. Glass Onion. Playing with all the same pieces, but in a way that just didn't come together in the end.
Yeah, that's just what it is. After Knives Out, I sat there and thought about it, like I said. Glass Onion, I enjoyed. Right up until the ending with the fire, and then you lost me. That would have been I'm just going to walk out of this movie. I'm no longer engaged in any way whatsoever. If it weren't, you know, 5 minutes from the ending.
Yeah.
That's where I turn off the movie. Like, in a movie that has a moment like that, that I liked a lot of up to that, but has a moment where I'm just like, I'm going to turn it off. Now, that's it's a pretty big deal to me. I don't do that very often. I don't have that emotion very often. I like to take movies as they're presenting themselves. And that's the hard thing with this movie is, how is it presenting itself? Does it want to be a smart movie about all these moving pieces coming together to a satisfying crescendo? Or is it just a joke?
Well, and that for me was one of the frustrating parts because, and we've talked about this already.
Yeah.
I'm kind of on the fence of, was this trying to be a real murder mystery and slipping up?
Mm-hmm.
Or was this genuinely just the Glass Onion that's full of layers and has nothing at the middle and means nothing? Because if that's what it is, I feel very frustrated with that. Like,
yeah.
You tricked me into watching this movie thinking that it would be smart, and instead you were just showing off how hollow it is.
What it feels like is it there are movies that could do that. Andy Kaufman-esque sort of none of this has meaning sort of things. This movie doesn't do that, in that it pretends the whole way it's smart.
Mm-hmm.
And it promises you that it's smart. And I think it wants to be, and then they couldn't bring it together at the end. I think you're supposed to, by the filmmaker's feelings, by the end, you're supposed to be satisfied. Like, that all made sense, that came together. And the big zinger is that the person on top is an idiot, which, again, I like as a reveal.
Yeah.
But
and once again, to the movie's credit, a lot of it was incredibly smart. I absolutely loved the scene where Benoit Blanc solves the fake mystery.
Yes.
In like 10 seconds. That was really fun to watch.
It was. We needed a reinforcement why he's considered the greatest detective and he's a celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
Really good moment.
I really did like watching all of the behind the scenes. Let's see the whole first half of the movie a second time from Janelle Monáe's point of view.
Yeah.
It didn't always hang together, but it was fun and it was smart.
Ish. I mean, I still have a little bit of a quibble with that. And this is, you know, I was watching it with my wife.
Mm-hmm.
And Emily says, in the middle of the film, she's like, how come she can do all this? And the movie at that point had lost her. And the, like the difference between, there are nitpicks and there are plot holes, right?
Yeah.
And for me, the definition of a plot hole is something that kicks the viewer or reader out in the middle of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Not something that afterward you reflect and you're like, how did this work? It is when you are booted and Emily's sitting there and being like, she's been presented to me as somebody who can't do all of this, who's very nervous. And she is just pulling off she's sticking the landing on every moment. And that was a moment that kicked Emily out. And then it kicked me out because she asked that. I'm like, yeah. How, why does she, like, part of what makes Benoit Blanc work is he is a very flawed detective. He is not Sherlock Holmes. He's always three steps ahead. He's always two steps behind, but most people are five. And that makes him a really interesting character is he's befuddled and he thinks about it and he works on it and he finds the solution rather than just instantly knowing it.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't get that same thing with her. We got scenes of like, I'm not strong enough to do this. And then she just walks in and does it.
Well, and they even went so far as to set up a lot of the explanations, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm going to use my, I can't even remember what they called it, my voice.
Yeah.
My sister always used this voice that she called the rich lady voice or whatever it was. And so, okay, that explains how you can do the voice, but they set up, I'm not going to be able to pull this off. And then they, she never doesn't.
Yeah.
Like, there was never a moment where
she has to cover for her mistakes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, just felt like, well, then why dangle that in front of us as an obstacle if it's never actually an obstacle?
Why is it, like, kind of an ultimate condemnation of this and of what we're talking about is, why is it a twin sister? This movie works the same way if it's her and she just didn't die. He didn't check.
Mm-hmm.
It actually is kind of better because so many of the things that are kicking us out, it's just that from it works so well in Knives Out, he wanted to do the same thing here.
Wanted to have someone dead. I don't know. I wonder if maybe at some point in a writer's room or whatever, they said, well, wait, we really need to hate this guy for reasons beyond just him being an a-hole. We need him to actually have killed someone.
It's a murder
other
mystery.
Other than Dave Bautista. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Or they needed to give him a reason to kill Dave Bautista, which is covering up the murder he already did, which, you know, what he did not cover it up in any way.
No, he's making the dumbest move possible at every point. And so that's the theme of the movie. But sometimes hanging a lantern on, look how dumb we are. Boy, I say this when we just did this in our podcast. But sometimes that doesn't work. Sometimes that just, like, you have to be careful where you hang a lantern. Hang a lantern is a writing term where in the middle of a book, you're like, you're not going to get an answer to this yet. It's good if one of the characters is like, man, I guess we can't get an answer to this yet. So that the reader stops fixating on it.
It's a way to acknowledge to the reader, hey, I see the same problem you do.
Mm-hmm.
It's on purpose.
Yeah.
Don't worry. And then the reader can stop worrying.
But if you hang a lantern on the fact that actually my story isn't very good, that's usually a bad idea. It works for podcasts. Trust me. But no, seriously, like, one of the things that I see in my writing sometimes is like, there's a scene that's boring. And early in my career, I think I learned this before I got published, but you might be able to find them. The readers will be like, man, let's stop having this boring conversation. Do something interesting. You'll see this all the time in new writers' writing.
Yeah.
The answer when you see that in your writing is to say, whoa, let's make the scene interesting and cut that. That's the answer. And if in your writer's room, you're like, man, our antagonist has made the dumbest decision at every point. And now we have the scene where he admits, or the movie admits, that he's just stupid and the whole thing's been stupid. The answer is not that. The answer is, let's go back and make it smart.
Yeah. Well, and I do think we need to point out, there are a lot of people, including some very good friends of mine, for whom that worked.
Yeah.
The movie saying, hey, actually, this is all pointless and this guy's an idiot. Like, they thought that was hilarious.
It is hilarious. I'm one of those who thought it just didn't make the movie work.
Yeah.
It actually, for me, hurt the movie, but it is hilarious.
There's a scene in the middle. which I think is one of the best scenes, but which kind of illustrates what we're talking about of style over substance, which is the one where they're all arguing and they're all yelling at each other, and then Dave Bautista dies at the end of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And throughout that whole thing, the special protective system on the Mona Lisa keeps slamming open and closed, and it's incredibly unnerving.
Yep.
Wonderful sound design, wonderful direction to have this thing just constantly slamming open and closed. It adds to the tension of the scene beautifully.
Yep.
But it also promises this is going to matter, and it never does. It's there purely for the audio.
No, it matters because it's reminding us she can take the Mona Lisa down and burn it, which is just dumb.
Yeah, but we already know that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, as a 5-minute long demonstration of this is how the thing opens and closes. Mm. I suppose you could make that argument that it's setting up the ending, but really all it is that scene is getting more and more tense because we keep thinking, oh no, what's going to happen to the Mona Lisa? And then nothing does until like 45 minutes later. And I don't know. It left me feeling very unsatisfied.
Most people writing that film would revise it to have him say, they made me put this failsafe on, but I turned it so that it's always off and you have to push a button to turn it on. And have him later on say, like when they say, this place could blow up, he's like, well, if I go down, I want the world's cultural heritage to go down with me. And then the protagonist saves the Mona Lisa at the end by activating the thing. You know, that's how you would write it most of the time. And they intentionally didn't. And I have to believe that was intentional. So yeah. I kind of end on, they decided to make it a joke, but they didn't fully commit.
Well, they spent the whole movie building up the line, right?
Mm-hmm.
You were right. Your name will always be mentioned with the Mona Lisa,
mm-hmm.
which feels like a joke ending, but that's what they were headed toward the whole time. And that's one of the reasons that they couldn't have him act intelligently.
He should have been killed by the Mona Lisa falling over in its case.
Or get his head like smashed by the thing.
Yeah, smashed by the thing. There you go.
Closing an opening. I don't know.
There's a fire. They make it a little bigger and he's going to run in there and hide. And then it
smashes shut on him
and chops his head off. I don't know. All right. I think we're done.
Whatever. I will say, I love Rian Johnson as a director. I love Benoit Blanc as a character. I hope Glass Onion was successful enough that we get a third one that is better. Let's get back to how good Knives Out was and refine the formula a little bit.
How's that, Ben?